I was hoping to get this out for Halloween, but that McVeigh character was dragging his heels. But it's still fresh in people's minds, so this episode is a horror special. So throughout this episode, we're going to be playing some horror-themed music by an act called Ogre, who are absolutely fantastic. I'm absolutely loving their stuff. I caught it via John Gray Vogel, had posted it on Facebook. He's the Murkbox guy whose music we played in the past. So Ogre are comprised of a chap called Robin Ogden. Cheers, Robin, for letting us have this stuff. And also a man called Dallas Campbell. And as I understand it, it's a pond-spanning collaboration. So thanks again, Robin and Dallas, a.k.a. Ogre. And if you want to hear more of their stuff, go to ogresound.bandcamp.com. And you can see some other releases they've done along with The Night of the Living Dead, from which these pieces of music are from. Here's on to the Meat for the Beast.
Horror Special.
Back, Meat for the Beast, episode 24. Me and Jim C, me McVeigh, Jim C over there,
laying it down,
recording in person for the first time in
yep.
Feels like fucking ever.
No Skypey business today.
Yeah, on a cold Sunday night here in Sheffield.
Bit of a horror special this time.
Been the season, Jim.
Yep.
You've done your annual week of horror films.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah, it was a bit interrupted by various things, but...
Well, that's unfortunate.
Still, it was still good. So what... And you've been to Celluloid Screams?
Yes, before that, yeah, Celluloid Screams.
Sheffield Horror Fest.
Yeah, another fine roundup. It was interesting this year.
Yeah.
Usually, there's a few films that, like... They're not that great.
Mm-hmm.
This year, there was nothing... It was all of a decent quality.
Right.
So that nothing was...
No standout turds.
But equally, yeah. I think, granted, I missed what won the audience award, which was the Autopsy of Jane Doe. I think that was a secret film.
Okay.
But what I saw was wonderful. But we'll come back to that, I guess.
Any highlights, lowlights, or in general films, experiences?
Highlight for me, third film, the one that came third in the... Audience Award was a film called The Devil's Candy, which has an artist who is, he's moving his young family into this house, there's some dodgy shit going on. So it's like a sort of metal Amityville, if you want.
Yeah.
Is like his paintings become he's painting some like lovely mural with butterflies for the local bank, and as he gets kind of infected by the house, it turns into a horrendous Francis Bacon hellscape.
Okay, that sounds good.
And all the while, the man who used to live at the house wants to move back in.
Right. Francis Bacon, favourite artist of Jack Nicholson's Joker. As
absolutely. but yeah, it's fucking ace. Really good, and it's well worth your time. I believe it's available somehow, but given how streaming services work, I know it's a.
What's it called again?
It's called The Devil's Candy. And
name rings a bell.
It's got Ethan Embry-in, who was.
Oh, has the cover got like some guy rocking out?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's not Deathgasm.
No, I'm pretty sure I've seen that somewhere. Not just a poster for it.
Right.
Cool.
Because, in terms of Deathgasm did a sort of early days Peter Jackson link between metal and the devil. This does a proper fucking horrible link.
Yeah, awesome.
But yeah, it's really good. But my personal highlight in terms of Brown Trousers time at Cellular Screams was the virtual reality business.
yeah, you told
fucking
me.
Hell. There was this film called Catatonic, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never had a go on an Oculus Rift before.
No, I haven't.
You put on this headset, covers your eyes, you put on some headphones, you're completely immersed, and you look around and all you can see is the interior of this film. And it starts off, you're in a lift, and you look down and your hands are strapped to a wheelchair, and you look around and there's a big burly orderly smiling at you nicely. And he just wheels you through this asylum where the most horrible shit is going on.
Sounds a bit like Jacob's Ladder or something.
Yeah, it's not too far from it.
Yeah.
But you're wheeling around, and I think what's interesting about it is there's so much you could miss just by you're going down a corridor, you hear something off to your left, so you immediately look to your left.
Is there any delay factor when you're looking around?
No, it's just because I think they're shot with essentially imagine a band with cameras pointing out, so everything is recorded at the same time.
A Google Maps style.
Yeah. Pretty much.
It sounds good, man.
It's fucking dark, and the worst bit was you get wheeled through his asylum, you see a fat lad with his knob out, some freak shagging the floor, and then a little fucking upset girl runs off, and it's just, this is not cool.
Sounds like Corporation, the nightclub.
Exactly. And I look behind me, this orderly's pushing me along, still smiling nicely. I'm like, for fuck's sake. And then the lights flicker, and he leaves me at the top of a stairwell, and the lights go off, and I'm like, for fuck's sake. And I turn around, and sure enough, there's a fat freak maniac with an apron on and an horrible pig mask type thing who just runs up, grabs hold of the handles and hovers you over the stairwell that goes into darkness, and then suddenly you're going down the fucking stairs, and then another 2 minutes later it's just horrible. I was shaking afterwards. I had to go outside for a fag.
So is it really, really immersive then?
It's completely immersive. I realised when I first started it, I didn't have the headphones on properly, and I could hear people, because this is just in the fucking foyer of the showroom.
I'm sat on a
chair spinning around going, what the fuck? I didn't have the headphones on properly, and then when I clipped them in place, it was and it was only 5 minutes long. I don't think I could have taken much more of it.
That's the future of filmmaking, surely.
I think so, but it's almost...
To some extent, for those certain games that kind of became their own thing, didn't they, in terms of... Games now are almost—they're not just tag-ons for films, are they?
Exactly.
Their own experience.
But I saw a video about 6 months ago of a guy who, I don't know how he'd worked it. I don't know. I'm not into the geeky side of it, but somehow he was running Grand Theft Auto 5 on an Oculus Rift.
Yeah.
So he put it in first-person mode, and I imagine I still don't think you could play a game like that. Bearing in mind GTA is a good 30-hour game, I guess, for the story alone.
Yeah.
I think it'd be good for short 10-minute bursts of multiplayer business, but playing a proper Alien Isolation, I think people would be dying of heart attacks just through the fucking bit, because it's that immersive. It's horrendous.
That sounds really good. Yeah. I'd definitely like to give that a go.
The guys who make Catatonic, I was talking with, shout out to Rob Nevitt, for the gaffer of Cellular Screams. The Catatonic lads, apparently the proper installation, as it were, involves you sitting in a wheelchair, and you go into the room and a nurse puts you in the wheelchair and ties your hands down and then puts this headset on you. That's how it's supposed to be. And you're like, yeah, it's fucking horrible, mate. Awesome. I'm having, even when I'm describing it, I'm getting a fucking cringe up my spine. It's horrible.
Speaking of immersive experiences, we both went to see, we were talking a lot about the John Carpenter gig.
Oh yeah.
Wow, fucking Victoria Warehouse. Brilliant. What an amazing joint. You know, just stare at a wall and see a distant, hear a distant rumble.
Oh, should have got in there early, mate, and be willing to spend 2 hours stood at the front of a massive crowd and not have a piss or a drink.
That's because I'm not fucking 12 years old anymore, you know what I mean?
It shouldn't be like that.
Because we were there, I saw you outside, that was about the latest, that was about 7:45. I mean, when was the last time we got to a gig at 7:45?
No, I mean,
fuck's sake.
I agree. It was a clusterfuck, and as I've said to you, Victoria Warehouse is taking a lot of flack for this caper. Hang on, we're just assuming that everyone knows what's going on here.
Okay, well, do you want to explain, or shall I?
John Carpenter last year announced
uh-huh.
a tour.
Albert Hall, who's going to play the... Oh, no, he was going to play somewhere Nordic or something.
Oh, initially, it was All Tomorrow's Parties in Iceland.
No, we were going to get a boat there because I didn't want to fly.
Yeah, that would have been an awesome three-week...
We would have spent about a week
ferried.
On a boat. Yeah.
But yeah, All Tomorrow's Parties booked him for Iceland, and then I said, hang on, if he's playing there, he's going to play at least Manchester and London. And sure enough,
yeah,
I was right.
Yeah, you've got a credit there, mate.
Thank you, man. Know. So I saved us all about 600 quid.
Yeah, and a nice boat ride.
Yeah, true.
We might have all bagged a rich woman, been able to retire though.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe it wasn't such
a
good idea.
Well, you pay your money, you take your choice. So, yeah, he was supposed to play the Albert Hall in Manchester and somewhere in London. Then ATP go bust.
Yeah.
So some other punters take over the gig. Yeah. And then they announce more nights, and two nights at the Albert Hall turns into one night in Victoria Warehouse.
And to credit me, I said, I'm pissed off about that because the Albert Hall's supposed to be amazing and Victoria Warehouse is supposed to be a shithole.
Yeah.
It was my experience of, well, what I'd heard on the Manchester sort of grapevine was the void. So I was like, well, not sure about this, but if we get there early enough... I remember, and I emailed you saying, let's get there, you know, let's get there the early side of 8:30.
Yes.
And we'll be sorted, surely, because the gig's not going to be on until at least 9, is it?
Exactly. And I think it's quite telling that some other punters took it over, because the way ATP were running it, you had that exclusivity, which is why fucking people coming from far afield, like as Glasgow, to see the Manchester show.
Yeah, you're director, mate.
Yeah.
You're always name dropping him, aren't you?
Hey! Andy Stewart, friend of the show. What was initially... two UK dates turned into a fucking big tour of like Brighton, Bristol, Dublin, Coventry, Liverpool,
right,
and all that shit. So it's like someone's like, hey, boom, we've got access to this Carpenter business, let's put it wherever we can. And so yeah, as we've said to each other off air, Victoria Warehouse is a venue for a good purpose, because aesthetically it's really, I think it's really nice. I thought the toilets upstairs specifically very tasteful.
I knew it. My personal experience was that there was Jameson's put on a Terminator night there.
Right.
And Melissa made us fucking late for it and we didn't get in, which I was cheesed off about, but she redeemed herself because she'd already bought me the Blu-ray. So we got to see outside there was actors dressed like Terminator characters or like, you know, like American cops kind of hanging around, giving orders out. And so it was nice to experience it. And a pal of mine that was inside said it wasn't that great anyway because people were talking shit throughout, as it usually happens at public events.
Right.
But there was like the only kind of celeb there. He said one of the people Arnie kills at the start was there, the guy from the X-Files.
Oh, that guy.
He's got a bit of an Arnie look about him.
Yeah.
And then the baddie from Commando was there.
Fucking Bennett.
Who was also in Mad Max 2, isn't he? Oh, no, sorry, no, it was the baddie from Cobra. I don't even know who that is or why he'd be there.
That's him.
Is it same bloke?
Same guy.
Right, okay. So that sounds good.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, unfortunately, we didn't get into that. But I didn't hear anyone saying, "Oh, what an amazing venue."
You know what I will say? In terms of like the actual creation of like the sense of event, I think they'd taken it down before you got there. When you initially went in, you just go left into the bar.
Yeah.
When we got there, there was barriers up, and there was tape on the floor saying, "Follow the orange line."
Okay.
And you follow it along, and it said, "No talking, no smoking, blah blah." And it was there was even a sign saying, you know, Liberty Island departure area, and there was a lot of nice little things dotted about. And then for some reason, they just pulled up the barriers, and it just turned into a free for all.
Yeah, it was. I started to like. I think when we first got there, I wasn't that worried because it was. It was busy, but it didn't felt like hardcore busy. It was like, it was obviously rammed, but it was like, okay, everybody got here early as well. But then we went outside for a fag, and suddenly a shitload of people seemed to descend on the place.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, that's not good because it's already fucking rammed in there.
Yeah.
And like, I was just going to loiter at one of those tables in the bar because you could sort of see more or less.
Yeah.
But straight away, when he started, it was like just a channel of people. And it was like some like just people sort of shoving past and stuff, just trying to get somewhere else. And it was like, and it wasn't stopping.
Mm.
I was like, I don't want to spend the whole gig someone's missus elbowing me in the dick and whatever.
It was relentless. Like, I got in through the archway and I was stood where I could actually hear.
Yeah.
I couldn't see shit. My fucking shins were killing. I was stood on my tiptoes for ages.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people are coming by, and like, you're shoulder to shoulder. It wasn't just like a busy gig.
Yeah.
Shoulder to shoulder, sipping your beer. And then some knobheads coming through, like just powering through. I'm like, where the fuck do you think you're going, mate? And, oh, I'm going over there to see my mates. I'm like, well, good fucking luck.
I know, when it's like that as well, you kind of, I mean, if you're shoving in, you're kind of creating bad vibes. And I'm sorry, but Manchester's the wrong place to be.
Yeah.
Pissing people off, isn't it? Because you never really know.
That's true.
Who you're pissing off.
Exactly.
And I kind of feel more reluctant to do that there than in Sheffield. And
yeah.
I don't know. I ended up sat on the bar at one point, like right at a disused sort of back bit of the bar.
Yeah.
And I got a really good view for about 15 minutes. Could at least see Carpenter, who, to be honest, looked like, from where I was sat, it looked more like sort of Kermit in a grey wig or something, you know what I mean? So far away. No, you know, it was still all right. And if Dead had just left me there, I would have been probably come out of the gig pretty happy.
Yeah.
And a lot of, well, I mean, some other guy did it before me, so I thought, well, if he's doing it, I'm going to fucking do it.
Well,
but then we all got thrown off.
Louise, wife of the Grimsby Lantern.
Yeah.
She was posting photos. She's like, this is a terrible gig. Yeah. Terrible view. Oh, hang on. This is all right. And then, 15 minutes later, they got booted off the bar.
In fact, I think I saw Louise on the bar, in the distant area of the bar. But it was one mank who looked like a true mank getting kicked off the bar, and he wasn't happy about it. And the bouncer was about half his size. He was like, what the fuck are you doing, you dickhead? I can't fucking see your way out. So fair play to him. The security staff all looked really sort of stressed and panicked.
I'm not surprised.
Like, shit, there's only 10 of us and there's like a million people here.
Yeah.
And they all look pissed off about what a shithole it is. And I did notice that because I did the PJ Harvey gig later in the week. Who I know, like, Anjon's sister Abby was there and was saying it was the same issues. Like, she couldn't see or hear anything and she had a crap time. I did warn her. I messaged her and said, if you're going... She announced she was going to the same place after I slagged it off, and I said, get there as early as you can. Get on that fucking balcony near the front. You'll be able to see and hear okay, and then if you need a wee, you've only got to power through about 10 people or whatever. You've only got like a... It's like, you know, it's not going to be as hardcore as if you're down the front, is it?
Yeah.
And she ended up having a crap night. So, I mean, but I've heard like people in wheelchairs and stuff were like... It's like shoved in an archway.
Fucking hell.
I mean, something's fucking wrong there, isn't it?
Yes. You know? Shit in hell. I never even thought about that.
Yeah. Because I know that place existed previously for like the warehouse project, where I know at least one person died, which, you know, it's tragic and terrible news.
That sounds to me like, for a clubby do, an inevitability.
Yeah, I guess.
You can't blame the venue for it, unless it was it crushing or was it something else?
No, it was. I mean, I guess it was kind of, you've got to expect that at a, you know, for want of a better word, like a ravey kind of night. There's occasionally someone's going to overdo it or find themselves out of their depth. And but then, you know, in a better venue, maybe should have survived. You know, I mean, because more experienced venues perhaps know
possibly
how to
deal
with that better.
Because it is it is really kind of cavernous, isn't it? It's like essentially your entry seems to be at the back end, and you're all in there in a big fucking hole.
And
there's one way out.
Yeah.
So yeah, it could have been like, I'm slagging off the venue, but I'm really slagging off the people who booked it and thought that was a suitable fucking place to host John Carpenter.
Yeah.
Because the sound wasn't great at all. When he announced The Thing, and because The Thing relies heavy on the bass.
Yeah.
It was just like, fucking hell. I was like, this is bad. And I think what my final straw wasn't so much the sound, because by that point I'd heard Precinct 13, Escape from New York. I was
they're the biggies, aren't they?
Yeah.
Really,
and like, even it was nice he was doing stuff off his Lost Themes albums. There's a couple of tracks on the first one at least, especially the last track, Night, which has got a real moody, just dirty bass line, and it's fucking ace.
And
I'm like, oh brilliant, yes, good, I've had enough, kind of, but I'll stay here and endure it. And then some cunt came through with a backpack, who wasn't carrying the backpack by his side like you would normally do when you're faced with a fucking crowd.
He's
on his backpack turning to his mates, and I'm like, so I think I just shouted, for fuck's sakes,
people are cunts,
went outside for a fag with you.
I mean, one good thing is, like, I don't see these guys, like James's band, The Clench, were all there. I don't see these guys hardly ever, and the night reminded me of what nice bunch of people I know in Sheffield.
Hey,
you know,
that's nice.
So that was cool. And Sweet Steve was there.
Sweet Steve, the sweetness.
Witness the sweetness. And that was great, because he's normally a bit of a morbid. He's normally a bit of a morbid fucker, and just kind of stands there without saying anything. And but Hal was
that's the weed paranoia, isn't it?
Yeah, Hal was kind of almost kind of in awe of meeting him.
Yeah,
and Sweet Steve was kind of into it. And I explained that they were both big game guys, and that kind of you know,
match made in heaven.
Yeah, man, they were getting on like a house on fire. And I never see Sweet Steve hit the booze, but I was driving because I wanted a cheap night. So Sweet Steve fucking hit it hard.
Witness the sweetness.
Yeah. So yeah, I was thinking we should at some point start doing Sweet Steve news.
Sweet Steve news. Well, yeah, I think that could be his little, like, the bookend of it. Witness the sweetness, and then drop some Sweet Steve news.
Because what's he been doing recently? He's been cat sitting for his folks, and last night he helped put on a firework display at his mum and dad's.
He helped put on a firework display.
Yeah, yeah. Quite an impressive display before I got vertigo and had to go and lie down for a bit.
Shit.
So, yeah.
Well, it's nice that he helped.
Yeah, yeah. So fair play to Sweet Steve.
Sweet Steve.
And, yeah, it was good to see Hal. I congratulated him and his missus on getting married, but was sure to point out that I wasn't invited to the celebration in any way. Which he said, you know, was a payoff for me not doing the same.
Well, yeah.
So fair play to the Lantern, the Grimsby Lantern. But yeah, all in all, bad form. I hope John Carpenter comes back and plays somewhere, like the Albert Hall or the Apollo or even like the Academy, just anywhere that isn't a fucking shithole, basically, or designed for a different purpose.
Yes.
You know, because I heard a friend who went to the Prodigy there, and I can imagine it would probably suit them a bit more, because in their earlier days, they were more of a rave sort of band, weren't they? And their audience is probably thinner than it used to be.
Yeah.
So
I think you need something like that kind of venue. Certainly not PJ Harvey, for fuck's sake.
Oh, yeah. Somebody on the
electronic dance business, something that you're essentially going to hear the music. You don't really need a good view. Like Chemical Brothers, you don't need a fucking good view of them, do you? Do you know what I mean?
It's probably better if you don't get a good view of the Chemical Brothers. Have you seen them recently?
No.
One of them looks... he looks like Penfold with more hair.
Nice.
One of them was always a little bit shorter, but he seems to have like dropped a head height.
Fucking hell.
And the other one's kind of lost his hair and not bothered shaving it off and looks a bit strange.
Oh, the blonde one.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
But the other guy that probably used to be the cooler of the two looks... he's got a bit of a strange look these days.
Interesting.
No, I mean, nothing against, you know, look how
they
want.
I've got a lot of time for the Chemical Brothers, I like it.
They maybe should have gone down a Daft Punk route, you know.
Put some fucking hats on.
Both gone baghead or something, you know. Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Meet for the Beast in Chemical Brothers Disc Shock.
Yeah, moving on. So it's been the season of spooky viewing.
Yeah.
And do you mind if I lead with something?
I hope it's what you're going to... Well, I think you're going to lead with.
I'm going to lead with a stinker, actually.
Oh, right, okay.
Dracula Untold.
Oh, fucking hell. Why did you watch that?
Finally saw that shit. And I watched it because I quite like Luke Evans.
Hasn't he got Dominic Cooper in as well?
Is he a preacher?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That Hollywood is still making... putting brown paint on white men to make them look Eastern.
Get out.
And initially, straight away it was like, oh my God. Or somebody said to me, you know, it looks like they've tried to turn Dracula into Lord of the Rings or some shit. And
yeah, get that feel.
Pretty much what happened. But the one thing I'll credit it is, when Charles Dance shows up, his vampire scenes, there was only about like 5 to 10 minutes of it. They were shit hot. It was probably like a personal favourite vampire stuff I've ever seen.
Shit.
He was creepy as fuck, and he looked like, not a big Charles Dance fan, because he always plays the same, like, he always plays that sort of English creepy look down your nose at people character, but he was kind of doing that, but in a kind of much more sinister way.
Okay.
And I really liked where he showed up, but then it did just descend quickly into kind of Dracula just turns into a bunch of bats and flies at a crowd, and that's how he kills them. It's like, don't really give a fuck about that, really. Yeah. You know? Which is a shame, because I like Luke Evans. I think he's alright. I think he would have been as good as the Crow.
What's Dominic Cooper doing in it? Who is he?
He's kind of the villain. He's like some kind of Eastern king. Like,
We're in washing turf here.
I think that's the phrase that sprang to mind, yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're allowed to say that. It's a thing. Tabloids.
Like, we need a little Chinaman. Who should we hire? fucking Tilda Swinton.
Get her in.
Get her in. George Takei is kicking off about that in Doctor Strange. I find her really annoying.
I don't care for her.
Yeah.
To be fair. I like her in Constantine.
Yeah, that's...
She works up as Gabriel.
She's fair dues. She's quite... Yeah.
But yeah, I'd take her or leave her, to be honest.
Yeah, she's good in that, to be fair.
I think Dracula Untold was an attempt at like rebooting Universal Monsters into one big shared universe. You know, we've got like...
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
Like you got the Marvel Universe, you got the DC Universe with Transformers and G.I. Joe. They're building a Hasbro Universe.
Right.
They wanted to revamp the Universal Monsters. Like they used to have, you know, Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman and shit. And I think Dracula Untold was the first step in attempting to do that. And it smells like they failed.
If they're going to do that, fucking get Guillermo del Toro. Get him to do it.
You think that would be obvious?
Yeah. Get him involved. Do it properly. Hey, celebrity news, McVeigh.
Celebrity news, what's happened, Jim?
Badly Drawn Boy came round for a cup of tea. Yeah, I'd put Badly Drawn Boy on a picture. A friend of mine called Ben, who runs a entertainment site called Weekly Beeper. He got in touch with me and said he'd like to kind of get some of my work and put it out as competition prizes to get people interested, you know, try and build up the following to his site. Oh, thanks, man. He'd tagged a few of the people in the picture. It was all about a kind of Manchester's musical history. And Butter John Boy kind of reached out and said he liked it. And I offered to get it framed because I thought, you know, it's pretty rare something like that happens. And, you know, Butter John Boy, to be honest, like my favourite songwriter. So it was quite a big thing for me. And then his missus got in touch and said, you know, they'd try and get around and pick it up. So I was thinking, well, I'll probably just end up passing it on to
one of his people.
Yeah, his fiance, which is kind of cool. And I thought, it's cool. Well, you know, I'll probably get to meet his lady and I'll, you know that he owns my work and wanted it. And that's great.
Yeah.
And then, but at the last minute, it was like, yeah, it's happening.
So he's
like, shit. And I wasn't even totally mentally prepared.
Did you have to have a quick tidy of the house?
Yeah, I actually spent the whole day tidying the house when I realised it was actually happening. Melissa was supposed to help me out and didn't bother, so thanks for that, love.
So, to be fair, this is for you, so...
Yeah.
Shit, Mercury Prize winner?
Yeah, so... and an actual, you know, I think I class as a proper fan, because I've got everything he's done, and pretty much, I think, apart from, you know, limited vinyls. I'm not really a vinyl man, because... I've got a couple of collections on the go. I decided never to do the vinyl thing, but so it was brilliant. It was kind of, I've never been one to think. I've had the opportunity to meet the odd hero, if you know what I mean. I've shied away from it because I think, well, I don't really need to. But so it was one that I was like a bit scared of, but it was about as good as it could have been. Really, it was a really lovely chat.
It's fucking nice.
Dog sat on his feet, and Roisin showed her his toys and. And he dissed my... we showed him like the wedding video where we danced to Silent Sigh, first dance, and he like dissed my dancing. So that's all good.
That's good. Also, like meeting your heroes, usually it's a thing where you happen to be at a thing that they're already at.
Yeah.
Or there's a chance to do something that's already happening.
Yeah.
This is fucking BDB coming round your house for a brew, which is mental.
Not only a brew, but... I bought these Homer Simpson donuts, like cereal. They had Homer Simpson on the box.
Okay.
Thinking he's probably not going to want one of these, but it looked like he'd lost a few pounds and he might be on a diet. Right. He's got like a younger girlfriend and stuff. Well, a fiance. She's called Leanne. She was a really lovely girl, actually. I really liked her. And
little did he know he'd come to Jim C's.
I hit him with a donut. I offered him a donut straight away. He's like, oh, I don't get to have one of these very often. I got Badly Drawn Boy's beard bearing down on this cheeky looking donut.
That's Hayes.
Yeah, and it was just a great experience. I thought at the I mean I wasn't expecting him to ever be there, and I thought if he did he'd be gone within a couple of minutes, but about an hour and a half they were there.
Fucking hell.
I was kind of it was just great. After a while, just kind of the nerves dissipated and kind of have a proper chat about stuff. And
yeah,
I told him about the Friends of Batman, and I can imagine a lot of people probably kiss his arse about his first album, which I think he's bettered a million times. And so I mentioned his De Niro soundtrack, which is a bit of an obscure one because of
what is the De Niro soundtrack?
There was a film called Being Flynn, right, with Paul Dano as well from Looper.
Yeah, yeah.
And really good film, actually.
Paul Dano, it's the There Will Be Blood.
Yeah. He's the priest. Yeah. It's him and De Niro are the lead people, and the actress from Dread as well.
All right, cool.
She's really good in it. Sorry, I've forgotten her name.
Do you mean Lena Headey or...?
Not Lena Headey. Anderson. Judge sure. Anderson.
I can't remember her name.
It doesn't matter, my boy.
Let's move on.
Leave that phone alone.
Let's move on.
I thought that film was genuinely the best thing De Niro's done since the 90s. Because all he seems to have done is his fucking Meet the Cunts or whatever.
Meet the Paychecks.
Yeah. And it was De Niro being... an actor again, you know, really playing an absolute arsehole, endearing dickhead.
Right.
And this homeless writer. And it was a good film.
Right. And Badly Drawn Boy scored it.
Yeah, he did right. The soundtrack, yeah.
And
it's a good soundtrack, actually.
That sounds interesting. I'm not aware of that.
Told him I was from Sheffield, and he apparently used to hang out around the Salter Lane crowd.
Yeah, Salter Lane represent.
Before the council fucking ripped the shit out of it, sold it off.
Salter Lane was a fine place. I was driving up there the other day, and I was like, oh, there's my...
It was the art college, by the way.
Yeah, it was the art college, and Sheffield Hallam University had, that's where the arty film and other weird business went on.
Yeah.
So that was my introduction to Sheffield.
Right, good man.
It's within the first 12 hours I was in there.
And, is that where you used to study then?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Salt Lane?
Yeah.
You never told me that.
I thought it was fucking obvious. I've been here since 98.
I thought it'd been gone by the time you got it.
No, man. Nice one. It still lasted another 5 years after me.
Cool ass place, that.
Yeah. You had dirty, shambolic 70s buildings for the seminar rooms, but you had this one lovely ornate centre building, which is where the library was.
Right, yeah.
And that's the only thing that's retained to this day.
Really sad to see that go, because it really was, for want of a better phrase, it was like a cultural hub.
Mm.
It had a real aura about it.
Yeah, I think because it was the hangover from the days when Hallam was a polytechnic, and it had that feel.
Yeah.
Where there was some real creative juice flowing. Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
But now it's just a little fancy housing estate.
I've always been a fan of shit coffee.
Right.
I don't like proper coffee. I like real shit coffee.
I've noticed that about you, Jim. And try not to judge you.
I used to go to Salt Lane to kind of revise and stuff when I was doing my A-levels, because I lived quite near there, and escape my family and stuff, get away from people and go up there and read the art magazines or whatever in the summer. And I remember there was this, the coffee machine did a cappuccino,
right,
which to me as an 18-year-old or whatever was like, wow, that's fucking great. You can get a cappuccino for 90p, and you could buy a Mars bar for 50p from the vending machine next to it.
Holy shit!
Dip it in the cappuccino, and it was bliss. If I was on death row, it's probably what I'd ask for if given any, any meal and drink combo.
Was it one of those shit? Was it one of those click cappuccinos that came in a little thin brown cup?
Yeah. You felt like you were drinking some plastic with it that melted into it.
Yeah. Work.
Okay, so inspired by a friend whose podcast was called Electric Soup Kitchen, who's done a cameo on the show, Marcus. Last couple of years, I've been doing a horror binge, kind of watching a horror film every night around the sort of Halloween kind of season. And kicked off with 400 Days, which I don't know if you've caught it.
No.
It's a sci-fi kind of horror thriller with Brandon Routh from Superman Returns.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was all right, man. It was a bit of a B movie. It's a weird one because it's kind of about deep space travel, but based in a bunker, and these people are kind of doing a trial for a deep space trip to Mars or wherever. Excuse me. And it just kind of follows. So it sort of follows their 400 days, and the trials and tribulations, and. A bit of Big Brother-y, but not in a shit way.
Right.
It's one of them I can't really say a great deal about without ruining it.
And okay.
It's best watched with an open mind.
Okay.
It was good. I enjoyed it.
It sounds a bit more sci-fi than horror-ish. Unless they all end up turning into sort of cannibalistic zombies and eating each other.
The trailer threatened to turn into your... at a certain point, any thrillery sci-fi turns into Alien and
Sunshine.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind Sunshine, but
I like Sunshine.
Yeah, well, it kind of seemed like this going to be the same kind of outcome, which wasn't the case. And it was all kind of it's all based around your perception of events. A bit kind of Usual Suspects-y in the sense that you're not always given the true facts,
right?
And you've just kind of got to view it with a kind of strange... You've got to step out of the box a lot. And it ends on a very what-the-fuck note.
Okay.
Which left me kind of Googling it in the same way as,
Primer.
Yeah. I spoke to a friend of the show, Daniel Stillings, about it, who had a good take on it. It's kind of one where there's not really a correct answer. Kind of thing, but probably the less said about it the better, but I thought it was worth mentioning because it was weird. You should check it out. It's one little shop on Netflix within 6 months because it bombed, from what I gather.
Right.
I think it's a year old.
That sounds okay.
Yeah, Brandon Routh's good. I like him. He looks like Superman now.
Oh, good.
He doesn't look like a little boy with no hair on his arse anymore. Nice pink arse, no hair on his balls. Yeah. You got anything for me?
No, man. I'll be honest. Since Carpenter, I've just been reappraising business. I've done The Fog, Halloween. I watched Halloween on Halloween, and watched Escape from New York last night. But The Crow. It was nice to see The Crow actually, because the night before Halloween.
Topically, the guy who accidentally killed Brandon Lee just died.
Get out of town.
Yeah. One of the cast members.
Michael Massey.
I think so.
Michael Massey. He played Fun Boy.
Right. Okay.
He was the guy who shot him.
Yeah, that's
Michael Massey's died.
Yeah, whoever it was, that must be him, I guess. But
fucking hell.
Yeah, I don't know what the cause was, but it was news recently, I spotted.
But yeah, I'd forgotten how good The Crow was. I think it was Alex Proyas' first film, and it's fucking masterpiece. It's wonderful.
Tell you what, McVeigh.
Go on.
I took myself to Cineworld a couple of weeks ago.
What did you watch?
I saw Return of the Caped Crusaders. Adam West reprising his role as the greatest Batman who ever lived. It was absolutely brilliant.
What happened?
It was kind of a love note to the 60s Batman, but at the same time a bit of a jovial nod and diss to the more recent Batman.
What about the actual story? Was it a compelling tale?
It was almost just like an extended episode of the 60s show, but Julie Newmar, I mean, somehow, I was saying to you earlier, like, somehow Burt Ward in his early 70s still sounds 17. I don't know whether there's a bit of pitch raising there or something, but it was literally like the 60s Robin back on the big screen kind of thing. Julie Newmar reprised the role as Catwoman, and to be honest, did sound like an old lady trying to sound young. But it was nice to know.
You would though, right?
It was good to know they got her involved, because it would have been a bit sexist not to, wouldn't it? Let's be honest.
Oh, it'd have been just a bit fucking generally rude.
Yeah. And it's a shame, like, you know, Burgess Meredith and Cesar Romero and Frank Gorshin passed away, sadly. But the other voice actors did good. You know,
we are 50 years down the line here.
I know.
That's crackers.
Adam West obviously sounds a little bit shaky in his fucking mid-80s. Doesn't sound 32 anymore. But within about 3 minutes, I got over that. And it's just all kinds of, you know, 60s Batman tomfoolery. Batman goes through a phase of being a badass Batman in the 60s world. Batman 66 world, where quotes not only the Keaton Batman, but also The Dark Knight Returns Batman in a zero gravity fight scene. It was just everything I wanted it to be and more. And I saw, you know, it wasn't really built for Cineworld. It wasn't, you know, it's a TV movie. But the animation was good enough to kind of get away with it just about. But I think it's one that probably will shine a bit more on the smaller screen. It wouldn't really stand up to a Pixar film, but as a one-off, one-night only showing, it was good. And on a Monday night, Cineworld Didsbury, it still pretty much almost filled the cinema.
Really?
Yeah. So Adam West has still got that pulling power 50 years later. 50 years since he last hit the big screen. So
raise a glass to that.
Let's raise a glass to that, yeah. So I'd highly recommend it. And I'm looking forward to getting a copy of that.
Is it out? Is it out yet?
I think we've got about a week until it's on Blu-ray.
Sweet.
There's a scene where they go down the bat. Things that they couldn't really show in the show, like, you know, when they go down the bat poles and they show up in their Batman outfit and shit. Yeah. They actually show the clothes going on and stuff. And they get into the Batcave and jump in the Batmobile. And it shows the whole leaving the Batcave.
Yeah, because usually it's just a fucking flap of grass that pops down.
They really kind of made a meal out of all that. And the 60s, you know, the old themes played by, like, sounds like a full orchestra. You know, all the James Bond level kind of brass going on. And
nice.
It was worth the trip to Cineworld just for like that 2 minute scene in the Batcave. And all in all, bloody good work. And it disses The Dark Knight Rises at one point, which got a good laugh. Well, I won't ruin it any more than that.
That's fine.
So, yeah, fair play. And I'd highly recommend that. But moving on, another of my horror binge, if that's all right.
Yeah, I think this is the horror special.
Yeah.
Despite the fact we talked about Badly Drawn Boy and Batman the most.
It peaked a bit early for me with the Greasy Strangler.
This is what I'm interested in, Jim.
Yeah.
I saw the trailer for it.
You've not seen it yet? Oh,
no, I've not seen
it. Mate, check the shit out of that one. It's almost as if... It felt like a cross between Vic and Bob and Repo Man with a horror theme.
Oh, fucking hell. That sounds like something.
Yeah, it definitely... Yeah, and Daniel, I mentioned earlier, Daniel Stillings was saying it owed a lot to a film called Street Trash from the 80s, which I've never seen.
Oh, I don't like Street Trash.
You're not a fan?
No, it's grimy.
Okay.
It's all right. It's not shit, but I felt unrewarded, and it's a little bit taste wise. It's a little bit off.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
It's a bit mean. Essentially, tramps are scum, and they get what's coming to them.
Right.
It's pretty ropey.
Sounds a bit harsh.
Yeah.
The premise of the Greasy Strangler is that there's a father and son team that do a walking tour of the LA disco scene. Which seems a little bit shy because they'll take you to some derelict looking laundrette or laundromat, and it's like, this is where the guy from Chic used to do his laundry. Funny. It's just just loads of ridiculous, puerile nonsense jokes just really make it. Like there's a scene where quite near the start where some people on the tour are kind of asking for free drinks,
right?
And it just goes on ridiculously long, and there's like a guy with a very strong Indian accent saying, "We need free drinks," and then there's a chap from Nigeria, I think, kind of going, "We must have free drinks," and Big Ronnie, the main character, saying, "No free drinks." Things just go on that bit too long, and then I think the horror in the film is all very jovial and cartoony and not that bad, but it's just full of really horrible sexual kind of ugly stuff. And the most repulsive bit for me is that Big Ronnie, he loves grease.
Well,
and he eats, yeah, he's always eating grease.
Is he eating grease? What kind of grease?
But like proper, imagine you've melted like 10 blocks of lard in a saucepan.
Right.
Like that's what he wants on his food.
Oh.
And he buys a hot dog and he demands more grease. And he ends up ripping open the hot dog thing and just dunking his hot dog in this liquid lard and then eating it. And it's just fucking vile. That's the worst horror for me, and it was just
that does sound quite horrifying.
Yeah, just Big Ronnie's obsession with grease. And he's got a big vat in his bedroom, which is what he dunks in to become the Greasy Strangler. And afterwards, he goes to a car wash at his mate, this sort of blind disco guy he knows from way back. You see him at the car wash, just getting leathered by these, these car wash bristles and wafting the grease off him, and. I presume there's some prosthetics involved, unless Big Ronnie's a porn star, but he's got this ridiculously big dick that's out for pretty much the whole film. Even when he just goes disco dancing, he's wearing an outfit where his dick's hanging out. But his son, who's the co-star, he's got a micro dick. At one point, his son has a wank with a micro dick. It's like, it's about the size of a kind of bird's beak kind of thing.
Nice.
It's just a really vile film, but it really, really made me laugh. Guardian gave it no stars.
Really?
Yeah.
Shit.
They reviewed it as if fucking Krzysztof Kieślowski made it or something.
Christ.
But I thought it was great. It was my winner of the week, I think.
We've previously mentioned on the show the Astron 6 lads who did Father's Day and The Editor.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I get the impression...
They're music-based chaps, right?
No. They're their film guys who just make all sorts of awesome, crazy business short films.
Yeah.
Have you seen Manborg?
Still haven't seen it. That's Turbo Kid guy, isn't it?
No, it's Astro okay. 6.
Right, okay, cool.
You can fucking take that with you tonight.
Oh, bloody well.
However, so Astro 6 is essentially five guys. If I'm correct, people can write in and say that I'm incorrect. But I think, I get the impression Astro 6 is five guys.
Yeah.
Two of them.
Five good men.
The director of Manborg. They kind of they've not split up, but they went their separate way, and they wanted to do a film called The Void, which was a crowdfunded thing. And
oh right, that was on solo screens, right?
Yeah, that was the opening night. Yeah. And it was as awesome as it was infuriating.
Right, right.
Because all the ingredients were in place, because it was essentially a siege at a hospital. Some terrible people are outside.
Yeah.
There's some unholy business going on inside. People within there are like, oh, you've got a pregnant woman and you've got a sheriff who's angry and you've got some other fucking rednecks. And, you know, that clash of... That is proper typical siege business. It was hard to say what was wrong with it.
Yeah.
But there was something a bit amiss. I think I said to Rob on the night, it didn't really have much of a feel.
Right, right.
And I've put that down to the lack of a soundtrack that really slapped you in the face. The soundtrack was fine. The sound design was brilliant. But the actual... In terms of a theme, it was begging for a retro Stranger Things style score.
Right, okay, yeah.
And the annoying thing is that the guys consciously... I get the impression that they tried to disassociate themselves from being some sort of retro throwback.
Yeah.
They just wanted to dish out some sort of badass horror.
Okay.
And they did, like, aesthetically.
Mm.
But the lack of a score that... made it feel like anything.
Okay.
Was a bit... Whew. So yeah, it fuses like Prince of Darkness and the Silent Prince that's in with The Beyond. Lucio Fulci's The Beyond.
That sounds good then, from what you're saying.
Yeah.
Those are three killers for me.
Yeah, it's fucking... It's ace. And I'd like to see it just to see what you think of it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't come out going, that was fucking amazing. I came out going, that was good.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Interesting, but... with doubts,
so it needs a reappraisal because as we were speaking outside, Ty West's House of the Devil, which I hated the first time I saw it, I found it boring as fuck.
Yeah, you said that
Babysitter with Tom Noonan. You watched it, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah,
to be honest,
I didn't like it at all. And then it appeared on Netflix, and I thought, fuck it, enough people have whinged about this, I'm gonna watch it again. And I watched it again, and I thought it was actually decent.
Okay, yeah, so there are films like that, aren't there?
Yeah,
we need a reappraisal.
Absolutely.
I think because it was on the Sunday when we were all a bit hungover as well. That was the first year Solo Screams. I had to fucking drive home after it. So I think at the time I was living in Buxton.
Oh shit!
So I was hungover and I was like, after this, I've got to go drive to fucking Buxton. Probably didn't improve my viewing experience.
No, it wouldn't.
And I stayed an extra day and I said I would. So I was in the doghouse.
Oh, shit. Shit.
There we go.
But closing film of Silent Screams was a film called Raw, a French film, which was Rob's film of the year.
Okay.
And it was getting a lot of press for people leaving the screen, people walking out. Apparently one person had a seizure. As soon as he said that, I was like, someone had a seizure? This sounds like a diabetic who's not enough to eat. Right. There's no way it's a fucking film giving you a seizure.
Yeah.
And watching it, you know, it's a little bit gross, but it's about a student who goes off to vet school to be a vet. Her older sister's already there. Like, she's a first year, her sister's a third year.
Yeah.
And they're going to vet university. Also, she happens to be a vegetarian.
Right.
So you've got her hitting university and having a fucking multitude of hazing rituals which involve all sorts of abuse.
Right.
You know, the older students are going, the new kids have to do this, and it's just horrible. And it's all right. It's all right. When it's like coming of age, cannibalism business. Interestingly, one thing they have to do is... the girl gets covered in blue paint, and the other guy gets, some guy gets covered in yellow paint, and they throw him into a locker and they say, "You're not coming out until you're both green."
Yeah.
Is there a French film? Soundtracked by the Long Blondes, Giddy Stratospheres.
Really?
And I'm like, hang on. So I'm watching this apparently vomit-inducing French horror film, and then Long Blondes come on. I'm like, oh shit, yeah.
They were both nice people in that band.
They are. Shout out to the Long Blondes.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, whatever. but, yeah, that was quite weird. Quite a weird choice.
That's not a bad song, to be fair.
No, it's decent.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of, it's like the one song on the soundtrack as well. It's not like there's a lot of songs on this soundtrack. It's like the one song on it.
Giddy Stratospheres. Yeah. It's quite a good song title, actually, that.
Yeah. But Raw, thoroughly decent end to the fest. It's meaty, it's pretty fucking hard going, but thoroughly decent.
Okay, we're back. Shitlist nomination.
Shitlist? We've not had someone on the shitlist for a while.
We've not. Stephen Hawking remains on there for his filthy crimes against Michael Keaton.
And following Suicide Squad, Jai Courtney gets himself fucking paroled.
He's off there. Yep.
Yeah.
You had the guy from Fantastic Four was on there. Is he still there?
Who?
The Mr. Fantastic actor.
Miles Teller?
Yeah, you put him on there.
Did I?
Yeah.
No, let's take him off.
Okay.
Let's take him off. I'm hearing enough good things about that drumming film.
Okay.
They did.
Okay. I never saw it.
I don't fucking know. But
it's supposed to be alright.
It's supposed to be good.
Okay.
I'm alright with Marcel. I think it's because he was such a dick. I think I've recently seen, I don't know, let's go with Insurgent, Divergent. Yeah. He was such a dick in that as well.
The worst Breton in space, Tim Peake, should stay on there.
From that guy, yeah.
He deserves at least a year on the list.
Absolutely.
Who else? We've got
Alex Ross is staying on there.
Yeah,
he's fucking red jumper, crafting his own porn.
There was somebody else in there, wasn't there? Scott Snyder.
Although to be fair, you do insist on calling Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking. Yeah, McVeigh relented. We put Scott Snyder on there.
Yes.
Or Scott Snyder.
Yeah, barista extraordinaire.
For making the Joker an everlasting demon, I think he deserves a bit longer on there. I've got a new one. I took my little girl, Roisin, to see... There's a book by the Gruffalo woman, Julia Donaldson, I think she's called.
Okay.
It's called Stickman. Okay. And the book, no issue with the book, Stickman. He's a good lad. He's just this bloke who's a stick having a shit time.
Okay, I understand.
He's all right. I owned the book before I had a kid because I was like doing a bit of research into like kids' books and stuff. And okay. I thought that looked quite cool. And I like the name Stickman stands out to me. It's like it's a cool name.
Right.
I took it to see the show at the fucking Lowry. And
what's the show entail? Like a pantomime style theatre show or what?
It's basically. There's like this kind of. You would imagine it's a bloke in a stick outfit, right? Because we went to see the Gruffalo's Child.
Right.
And things like the mouse is a major character, and the mouse is just a woman in a hat with a couple of bobbles that look like mouse ears.
That's some low rent shit.
It's like very Guardian friendly. Not, I mean, we're both Guardian kind of readers, aren't we? But
I would say so.
It's kind of very pandering to the whole every parent there is either a teacher or a social worker kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
I get you. Yeah.
Stickman took it even further. Like instead of being just a big stick bloke, it was a hipster holding a stick.
Fuck off.
Yes.
What? Really?
It's a hipster holding a stick, and that's supposed to be Stickman.
Did he have a tash?
No, it was just a guy in a bad shirt, and And if he'd have, if
how
he'd
is
have
this a... supposed to capture the minds of children?
To be fair, my kid liked it, but things like a snowstorm, some umbrellas come out, spin round, and have got like bits of like fluff on the end that look like snow.
Okay.
And that's what we're dealing with. And like my kid was like thought it was great, so I'll give it that. But I wasn't very impressed. So I'd like to nominate Stickman for the shit list.
Well, the picture you've painted, I've got no choice but to agree to this.
So Stickman's going on there.
A man with a stick?
Yeah, like just a bloke holding a stick.
As opposed to Stickman. An actual stick man?
Well, what the stick was technically a mini version of Stickman, but I mean...
Not the point.
Say, like, if you went to a show called The Gruffalo, you'd expect The Gruffalo, right?
Yeah.
And The Gruffalo might have, like, a human face with a nose painted on some shirt, but you'd accept that as long as in a Gruffalo outfit, even with an actor's face, it's still kind of The Gruffalo.
Yes.
Which was my experience with The Gruffalo's Child. Was kind of, okay, I can get, I'll let them off. But Stickman, yeah, he's just bloke, just a normal bloke holding a stick with arms and legs. Like, literally a stick sight, smaller than the stick I throw for Betty. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, fuck you, Stickman.
Like, if it was, when you said it was a hipster with a stick, I'm picturing some finely dressed dude, probably wearing a top hat, wearing with an ostentatious cane that is a full-on umbrella-sized badass stick.
No, not at all.
Really?
It was just some random 23-year-old holding a stick.
That sounds shit as fuck.
Yeah. So fuck you, Stickman.
Fuck you, Stickman. Yep.
Fuck you in the ear, Stickman. My wife argued that our kid loved it, but fuck that. You know.
Yeah,
I was there as well. You know.
Yeah, you were there. Yeah.
I could for like. Half that money, we could have gone to see the new Star Wars film or something. And there's no doubt that, like, Darth Vader's Darth Vader. It's not like a guy in a checked shirt holding a Darth Vader figure, is it? You know what I mean?
Yes. it sounds like a low-rent budget version of something you've gone to see.
Yeah.
But it's not.
And,
you say this was a Lowry?
Yeah, so it wasn't exactly cheap. You know, the Lowry's like, I think the show was £20 each.
Cock on a stick. No pun intended. But that sounds fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Sounds like you've been shortchanged. I don't want to get into semantics. It's not like the fuck man. It's not like. It's not that stick man is the issue. It's the twat who put on this low budget version of his show that didn't do him justice.
I think they just want that. they want that nice Guardian review. Like, let's be honest, the Guardian, things like Suicide Squad are basically Die Hard with comic book characters, right?
Yeah.
The Guardian are always going to shit on it.
By and large, yeah.
So if they make the pantomime version of Stickman, which is basically what every kid actually wants to see, they're going to turn up their nose at it. And that's my issue, really. Like, why not just give the kid a fucking Boken a Stickman outfit? They'd love it.
Yeah.
I would have fucking loved it. Instead of just having to sit there for an hour watching some bellend wave a stick around, I could actually watch a Stickman. Like, if there's a big Stickman on the stage, I'd be like, okay, there's a Stickman. Fair enough. I got what I came for.
Yeah, like...
It's not like John Carpenter... I mean, it was a shit gig from the point of view of the venue, but it's not like Carpenter showed up and played the theme tune from Friends or something, is it?
No, exactly. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, you don't want that... Like, it's a kid's thing, right?
Mm.
As a concept. Stickman's a kid's thing. You don't want, like, some sort of interpretive version of that. Like...
Yeah.
Like, if you went to see the fucking stage play of Ninja Turtles and it's all a bunch of...
Bloke holding a turtle.
Well, I would say that in terms of if you want to go with the Guardian readership, you could have a bunch of well exercised ladies wearing yoga pants doing an interpretative dance.
Well, that sounds better than Stickman. At least there'd be a perv factor. You know what I mean?
You can't be perv. You're taking your kids to see this. But like, yeah,
I take that back.
You shouldn't have to make that leap, especially for kids' business.
And he wasn't... If he'd have been a really charismatic, cool guy, I would have probably forgiven it, but... He wasn't.
Was he, like, children's playtime presenter, kind of?
Well, when I googled it, it wasn't even this guy we saw on the... He wasn't the guy that we saw, so maybe he's just, like, that guy's day off guy or something.
Oh, you got the fucking...
I felt pretty... And it was a Saturday as well, so you'd expect they pull out the big guns.
Was it a matinee performance?
It was, but there's only like about two in the day or something. Yeah, so
this guy was probably spending his Friday night full of coke and whores.
Full of liquor.
liquor and whores.
Well, it's not good enough for me, mate. Anyway.
I don't care for it.
So are you up for that?
I'm up for it, yeah.
Good man.
I don't understand it, but fuck it anyway.
Well, I'm going to power through a couple of these films. Conjuring 2, very disappointing. Pile of bollocks, actually.
I've not seen it. I'd like to see it. I enjoyed the first one, especially Vera Farmiga.
Yeah, I mean, I can't fault her and Patrick Wilson, is it?
Night Owl.
They were fine, but it was just a flawed concept. And I've heard the Timothy Spall version's way better. And
It's based on the proper haunting itself.
Yeah, the Enfield Haunted.
That did kind of inspire a lot of things. Poltergeist in Amityville and whatnot. I don't know. Poltergeist, isn't it? Wasn't that an inspiration of Poltergeist?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know.
I'm not going to look at my phone.
Possibly. Let's just roll with it. Yeah. Conjuring 2, I don't know, probably ticked a couple of boxes, but compared to the original, was a bit weak. Okay. So then there was Southbound, which...
Southbound, yeah.
I quite enjoyed, to be honest.
It's alright, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was alright. Yeah, I mean...
It suffers from the anthology inconsistency business, in that some stories are stronger than others. Mm-hmm. But I did think that the bookending story was strong, and I thought the one with the guy who knocks the girl over and is in the hospital was pretty sinister.
Yeah, that's what stands out, actually.
Yeah, that's fucking nasty.
So I'd say that was a definite highlight of the horror week for me.
Right.
Again, it's one we can't really say a great deal about. But in terms of anthology horror stories, it wasn't... Like, some of them really cram them in, don't they? And it was only like 4 or 5 stories, so it wasn't too extreme, I thought.
Arguably, it's just one story.
Okay, yeah.
What did you say?
I think there's about 4 or 5 chapters to it, but...
But you can edit this out if you want, but it starts off in a certain way, which leads into... I think what's nice about it as an anthology is that everything leads into each other.
Yeah.
And then by the time you get to the end, you realise you're back at the start. That it's an entire fucking... It's like a dirty Mobius strip.
Right, right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah.
But I think those floating lads, those floating lads.
That's a good. Fucking... That's the episode title. those floating lads.
They're fucking menacing, just like driving down a desert highway in the cold light of day, and you just see those fucking guys. That's horrible.
Yeah, that's what creeped me out more than anything.
Yeah, I didn't even know what's going on. I don't know why they were there, but they were horrible.
Yeah, it was like, to give it some context, it was basically a horror road movie. The consistent strain was like, it's kind of, I guess they kind of looked a bit Angel of Death-y, but
yeah.
Very, but more like just a like, skeleton torso kind of thing.
Yeah, just floating.
Something very sinister like about them.
Bony wings, which obviously they wouldn't be able to fly with those because it's just bone. But
And I thought they were more sinister when you never actually saw them move.
Yeah.
Because there's one bit where one of them moves towards someone and it didn't really do much for me, but when they're just kind of hanging around.
Yeah,
it was almost like those things. I'm not a big Doctor Who guy, but those angel things from Doctor Who. It was,
yeah, similar thing.
Yeah, similar terrain. Really.
Did you watch? I don't know whether it was VHS or VHS 2. Have you seen the VHS films?
Never saw the second one, but the first one I really enjoyed. Yeah,
I think there's another third one as well.
Yeah,
but I think in the first one, do you remember that one where it's like some guys in a car and they end up in a haunted house. It's haunted and there's like shit coming out of the walls.
Yeah, that was good.
I think that's by a... There are a gang of guys called Radio Silence.
Right. Okay.
And they're the guys who did the first and end bit of Southbound.
Oh, right, okay. Cool.
Essentially where the floating lads have the most presence.
The floating lads.
But yeah.
Beautiful. That's the title of a horror film. The Floating Lads.
I think it's. But their segment of VHS was really effective, and I think it's three guys, and that they go under the name of Radio Silence, as a.
Yeah.
But yeah, Southbound, well worth anyone's time.
Definitely.
I would say.
Definitely. One more. Probably the last one worth mentioning was Marcus, the Electric Soup Kitchen friend of mine, podcast inspired this pod. He told me to check out Thale. I think it's a Norwegian film and they say Thale,
right?
But it's Thale, and it's essentially, it's like a cross between Bigfoot and the Hendersons and creepy dark shit, really. Although the end scene of Wreck. Do you remember the end scene of Wreck?
Where you've
got that weird fucking room with a creepy voice tape. I mean, it definitely must have been inspired by that because it's very similar. And then you've got this kind of, this strange woman that's got a bit of a feral vibe.
Right.
Excuse me. And it's quite mythological. Kind of, not so much a horror film, more like a kind of mythological thriller. And I was expecting, you know, like a lot of European horror, it can tend to be quite on the serious and very disturbing, darker end of the horror spectrum. And it was more amusing than I realised it would be.
Okay.
Because the two main guys in it, one of them was very straight and unbothered by anything, and the other one was very jumpy and normal and probably handle it like a normal person would. And it made for some quite subtle comedy, and I don't know whether that was intentional or not, but it made it a lot more watchable for me, because I thought it'd be more of a challenge to watch than it was.
Right.
And it was actually quite funny, and I don't know whether that was intended or not, but it had something quite interesting going on about it, and I'd really recommend that. I think it's from 2015. I think it's a year old. I don't think it's... Yeah, I think it kind of passed me by a bit, but definitely.
Good.
Yeah, definitely check that out, because something interesting about it, and it was one of those where it kind of sets up quite a creepy, horrible kind of premise, and as the film goes along, you discover more about the characters involved, and in some ways it's kind of warm. It's almost like a feel-good film, but still quite menacing and nasty.
Sounds nice.
So something a bit different. Like, it's definitely horror done in a different way than usual. And right. I would argue probably maybe not even a horror film really, but yeah, there are horrific parts to it. And obviously there's, you know, it's kind of all about the premise is that there's as if humans kind of evolved in one way and another form of humanity chose not to kind of go down the civilization as we know it route and chose to kind of loiter in the shadows of the forest and that kind of thing. And
right.
Almost like, I don't know. But it's another one. The problem with these films is sometimes the less you say, the better, isn't it?
Because yeah.
I didn't watch the trailer for it. I just went in blind, and that's probably the best way to see it. So anything I say is probably going to take away people's experience, but it was definitely one I'd recommend.
Sounds all right.
Yeah, it was all right. It was all right.
Sorry.
Good trousers, Del Viewing.
Fucking hell. Have you seen The Voices? Punters at Cellular Screams got given it away in their goodie bag.
Right, okay.
It's got Ryan Reynolds in, and...
Oh, shit. Go on.
Ryan Reynolds, Gemma Arterton, and Anna Kendrick.
Yeah.
He's a dude who works at a plant, and hears the voices of his dog and his cat. And
it's on Netflix, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, because Daniel Stilling's mate said it was well worth a peep.
Shit.
Yeah.
I didn't see it appear on Netflix.
Well, you'll have to trust me there, friend.
Well, either way, it came in the goodie bag at Cellular Screams.
Right.
So I watched it. Tonally, it's kind of a bit too jaunty for its own good because it's a little bit fucking heavy. Yeah. But the...
Looks a bit Heathers in tone from what the trailer I saw.
Yeah, it's got that. Because also, what's nice is that you've got Ryan Reynolds doing the voices of his dog and his cat.
His
dog is some sort of big mastiff beast. And speaks like a southern hillbilly.
Right.
His cat is a knobhead and speaks with a Scottish accent. And Ryan Reynolds' Scottish accent isn't that bad. And it is like the dog and the cat are like the angel and the devil on the shoulder in terms of what he should do. And it's well put together. But what surprised me most about it is that it's by the woman who did Persepolis.
Uh-huh.
And it's her first live action film.
That came on my radar today.
Really? How did it come on your radar, Jim?
A friend of mine, Patricia McNulty, put it on Facebook. I'd totally forgotten I owned it. Good film, that, actually.
Was it a book first, wasn't it?
Yeah, speaking of Guardian reader friendly.
Right, exactly, yeah.
We're not Guardian haters, by the way, because both, you know, it's not like we read the fucking Sun or something, is it?
Well, we're not Guardian haters, but I think I'm speaking for myself, but you might be on the same of it. Kind of hate what the Guardian has become to stand for.
Yeah, I remember last year the Daily Mash did one about how the Guardian looking forward to ruining Christmas for everybody.
Yeah.
Which I think made a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
Because it's like, well, yeah, they kind of do a bit, don't they? It's like, oh, don't you enjoy Christmas because so-and-so in this country is having a really awful time. And it's like, well, what? That's really shit, but it's not like we don't acknowledge that and occasionally donate to these causes, and it's not like it's really our fault because we don't vote for the government that bomb these fuckers, and you know what I mean? Excuse the language.
Yeah, you're right. Excuse the language.
It's not like I voted for David Cameron or Tony Blair.
Beast in apologise for swearing shot. Excuse the language for saying fuck.
It's because I've got a kid, mate. I keep dropping the ball and apologising to Melissa, so I don't get.
Don't apologise to Melissa. Apologise to your child.
She loves a good swear word.
For improving her vocabulary.
She came up with a great swear line the other day. Oh my shit! And we taught her to say "Oh my sugar" instead. And
what's the Omar in front got to do with it?
Oh my shit!
Oh my! Yeah. Right.
And I call my mum the old bugger. Because we used to call our dog the old bugger. And when the dog died, I started calling it my mum instead. And when my mum comes around, I call her the old bugger. And Roisin tells me off and says, "They're naughty words. Don't say those naughty words."
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. But yeah, I think The Guardian, as much as it's the only paper I would probably get, or The Independent, if it still existed.
It kind of does, though, because I thought it was gone and it's not.
It's gone. All that's left is The Eye.
Yeah, yeah. Is that like a weekend job?
No, I think it's a... I think it's a little... It's like a daily... It's like a Metro-style paper that you can buy for 20p.
I would argue The Independent was a better paper, to be honest. It had a more balanced view of the world, I think.
Yeah. The Guardian... there's times when The Guardian makes my fucking skin crawl, and I'm annoyed that I've got to that age where that's the case.
Yeah, I think
sorry, this isn't really a topic for Nick. We're just talking about fucking politics and shit here.
I think things like you know, I was saying about the Greasy Strangler getting 0 stars from The Guardian.
That sounds like bullshit.
It's kind of like you're just looking at it like in a completely inappropriate terms.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're into these Transformers films. I'm not dissing them or anything, but there's a certain way to look at that kind of film, isn't there?
Absolutely.
It's like, you're not...
I found myself the other night trying to explain, like, G.I. Joe Retaliation was on telly.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to explain to the person I'm watching it with what's going on and why it's important.
Yeah.
And as I'm hearing myself say these words, I'm describing the plot of G.I. Joe Retaliation and why certain things are important.
Yeah.
And I sound like a fucking idiot. Or a child. And also, I had to take a step back and realise that. It's like, why the fuck do I know this? But I did. And we get onto that.
I think we're on about viewing things from the wrong perspective. Reviewing them from the point of view that everything has to be 3 colours red.
Yes.
Or whatever.
And I said... she said... Well, I said, we don't have to watch this. She said, well, you said it was good. I said, no. I said I liked it. There's a fucking difference.
Yeah.
Between me saying it's good and me saying I like it. Because I like
fair
it.
Fair point, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like I really enjoyed the new Batman 66 film, Return of the Caped Crusader. But obviously, I'm watching it from a certain perspective.
Yeah.
But if you took that and reviewed it from the same point of view as the Christopher Nolan Batman, it would probably get ripped apart.
Obviously,
which would be completely inappropriate because you've got to take these things into account. I think, like, I mean, if John Carpenter wasn't 70s 80s director, if he would appeared now, you do have to think, what kind of reviews would he get from The Guardian for a film like They Live and even like Escape from New York?
Yeah.
They'd probably tear it apart. They'd say, well, this is a bit silly. And references, it's like, well, fucking chill out, man. Like, Suicide Squad, to me, was great popcorn viewing. And it's basically Die Hard with superheroes in, right? And what's wrong with that? Like, why not? Why not review it from that
actually,
point of view?
It's more Escape from New York with superheroes.
Yeah.
Or Dirty Dozen if you want to add it some fucking credence.
Yeah, and it and I'm seeing like reviews for The Killing Joke where it's calling the Joker a misogynist, and I'm like, are you for real? Like, he's the fucking Joker. He's a mass murderer. He doesn't really. He's not got an anti-female agenda. You know what I mean? It's like it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like society's lost the plot in some ways.
The plot is going big time.
You do, it does make me despair sometimes. And if anything, the Killing Joke film, it kind of suffered from pandering, from trying not to be what it actually is. Because essentially, Batgirl gets shot in the nether regions.
And there's allusion to other nefarious business.
Yeah, and
I think
probably raped.
Yeah.
Which is strongly implied in the book.
I would say so.
And the film very much kind of tries to diffuse that by making it more of a Batgirl experience. Some of it was hit and miss, but it still got ripped apart for being this misogynistic film. And it's like, well, what the fuck? Like, it's the Joker. it's like calling Jason Voorhees a racist because he kills black people occasionally.
Yeah, occasionally.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm pretty sure Voorhees has killed the odd black guy.
Pretty sure Voorhees is an equal opportunities employer.
Yeah, I don't think Voorhees is a racist. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But he killed a black guy. No, well, yeah, but also
yeah,
the other ones.
Yeah, killed a few whiteys as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's deep shit, McVeigh, but...
It doesn't feel... Given the words that have been used, it doesn't sound that deep.
But could probably wrap this up soon.
I think we should.
One more thing I was going to mention.
Go on.
Was, another one was Black Mirror, we talked about earlier on our own. The new series of Black Mirror has got Netflix money behind it now, and what I've seen so far was very, very good.
So, I've only ever seen the premise, the fucking the pig.
That was a good one, to be fair. Yeah.
Also, pre-revelations of David Cameron fucking a pig.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a nice touch.
As Charlie Brooker said, he didn't realise he was making a documentary.
Well, that's twice he's made a documentary about the future.
Yeah.
Nathan Barley, 10 years ago.
Right, yeah, of course, yeah, yeah.
Look at society now. Take a trip down Oldham or Division Street. It's fucking Nathan Barley City. Barley's strong. I've seen Barley recently, and it is...
It's still a good show.
Yeah.
I've got a shotgun on my back. another one I was going to mention, The Expanse. Just started watching that.
Is that the thing with Tom Jane in?
It is, yeah.
That looks all right.
Tom Jane looking a bit... what's his name?
Ill?
Yeah, he looks a bit like...
Christopher Lambert?
The guy that they reckon Heath Ledger's Joker is based on.
Tom Waits?
Tom Waits, yeah. It's right. Very much Tom Waits kind of look about him. Shit. And it seems pretty interesting, actually. It seems like the new... It's a beautiful looking show.
That's good.
It's a bit out there. It seems a bit like the new Battlestar or something. I don't know... The lead man seems a bit of a bell end. Right. I don't know whether that was deliberate.
Is that not Tom Jane?
No. Tom Jane's more like a kind of... It's a cross between Rick Deckard and Tom Waits.
Okay.
Which, not a bad combo, yeah, when you think about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the lead guy's a bit like more like one of the knobheads at Aliens.
Okay.
And looks good. Looks good for, you know, CG heavy, but... I think we've reached a point where CG started looking all right. Do you know what I mean?
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Like Michael Bay knows all about that.
Oh, shit. So, yeah, I'm liking it. I've caught about 2.5 episodes so far.
Cool.
And it's all good.
We should give a shout out to Steve Dillon.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Who drew all of Preacher. And who sadly died recently.
Yeah, sad news. Fairly young death as well, like 55, wasn't it, or something? I remembered his Rogue Trooper as well. It's pretty fucking shit hot in the 80s. And you said, I think he drew Punisher Warzone, didn't he? Which I never read, unfortunately. So I'm going to have to check that out.
He did some Punisher, but I think he had a relationship with... Because he did Preacher with Garth Ennis. Garth Ennis' run... on Punisher was, I imagine he would have been. You know, it's where I famously got my sealed Watchmen signed by Dave Gibbons. Oh yeah, fresh out of the bag.
Yeah, McVeigh bought himself a fresh copy of Watchmen. Don't break the seal, Dave.
McVeigh brought himself his own freshly thumbed copy of Watchmen.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Dave wasn't doing a signing, and he. You know, almost made a cunt out of himself, you could say. But got a nice picture of Rorschach. So, hand you that one, man.
Yeah, what do you want?
I haven't got a Dave Gibbons Rorschach in my book.
Yeah.
Even though I probably read it 20 years before you.
How does that make it more worthwhile? Just because you read it earlier. Just because you're older than me. That doesn't really make it...
No, I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one, friend.
Thank you. There you go.
Yep. Gibbons.
I can dig it out if you want. I can make you look at it if you want.
It'd be like if I bought Mark Lanegan's new album, got him to sign it. We've got him to sign a sealed copy.
Oh, we're doing it, Jim. Let's have a look. It's not even in a fucking bag. Because it's so thick.
It is the classic copy, actually, with the cool. That is good. Good shirt.
James Herm. Dave Gibbons, 2007.
That's nice.
Look at that.
That is nice.
That's all right, isn't it?
Good on you. Good
not
on
even
you.
In a fucking bag.
Good on you, friend.
Is that alright with you?
Yeah.
You know what I'm gonna do?
No, you've got.
We'll leave it on the shelf like that. What do you think of that?
Did you ever get around to reading it? We should wrap this shit up. We've got about 2 hours here.
Yeah.
I think we've reached the end, McVeigh.
I think we have.
So we're going to end with another track from A Night of the Living Day rescore.
From Ogre.
By Ogre, aka Robin. Cheers, Robin. You're a good man. And Robin, I suggest you check out Return of the Caped Crusader, because Burt Ward's Robin is fucking solid. Bloke in his 70s sounds 17 again. You've got a good name there, mate. You're all right by us, and your music's fucking solid. So go to ogresound.bandcamp.com. This was Meat for the Beast.
Nice one.
Episode 24.
24!
And this is The Sounds of Ogre.